August 7th, 2020, Board of Optometry meeting.
In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board, and the mission is mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the Consumer Information Act. Item C, President's Report. I'd like to thank our Assistant Attorney General Mona Baskin and Executive Director Margaret Whalen for their assistance in preparing for this meeting. I'd also like to thank Ms. Whalen for her timeless efforts on behalf of the board and her consistently helpful demeanor. And finally, our immediate past president, Dr. Chris Saugus. Thank you for your commitment and service to our profession and public health and safety. This is my first meeting as the board president, and I apologize in advance for the awkward pauses or shuffling around on my part. Next, item D, review of discussion and possible action on investigative reviews and complaints. Do we have any complainants, doctors, or counsels present?
Dave Anderson, president. Present.
Okay.
I just got to read myself.
And you are here for Dr. Stahl, is that correct?
Madam
no,
President.
No, you guys are
so excellent.
He's here for...
Actually, this is Scott King. I'm here.
Go ahead, Scott.
Scott King on behalf of Dr. Stahl. Thank you.
Okay. Any other patients present or counsel or doctors present?
Dr. Stevenson, Mike Georgia.
So, Madam President, it looks like you have both patients and doctors, so you can just take the complaints in the order in which they're listed on the agenda.
Okay.
And also, that's Dr. David Anderson. He's just here for the review of the order update for his order.
Okay.
It's agenda item G.
All right. So let's proceed then with Dr. Todd Geiler. IR number 202020. Is Dr. Geiler present or a patient present in this case?
Yes.
Okay. Patient present.
Okay, and let me start by saying that since this is a telephonic meeting, before we speak, we'd like the patient or anyone referring to the patient to use initials only, and any other speakers, please start your sentence by identifying or using your name first so other attendees on the call will know who's speaking. So patient JN, I believe, correct?
Yes, correct.
You're present? Okay, so if you'd like to start any comments that you have to make about this complaint against Dr. Geiler, I'd like you to proceed.
Actually, Madam President, if you could provide a summary first and then ask the patient,
certainly.
I would be appreciative.
Okay. Would one of the board members like to provide a summary in this case?
Madam President, this is Margaret Whalen.
I will.
Okay.
Certainly. So I'll proceed. This is Dr. Moffitt.
Okay. Go ahead.
So patient JN saw Dr. Geiler for a diabetic eye exam January 29, 2020, at which time a multifocal soft contact lens fit was also discussed and initiated. Patient JN had difficulty with the multifocal soft contact lenses and followed up two more times to improve vision. Of note here, patient JN also had bilateral RK surgery. She was unhappy with the vision afforded by the contacts and eventually resumed monovision contact lens wear, which I think there were also still some residual complaints with. She was billed initially for the 92004 complete eye exam. No contact lens fit fee that I could find. And then by Dr. Geiler's statement, she was billed a 99213 visit at each subsequent contact lens follow-up. And patient JN, if you'd like to proceed now.
Thank you. Good morning. I just, my purpose of the complaint was basically because of being charged for follow-ups in order to get a correct vision or fit for the contact lenses. And just because of my past history, I've never had a follow-up charge, and I question whether that was standard practices. And then after consulting other Eye doctors and practices in Phoenix and in Prescott area, all of them said that there was never a follow-up fee, so that was my question and complaint was the follow-up charge. Thank you.
Okay. Any discussion by the board?
Madam President, this is Margaret Whalen. May I say something?
Is Dr. Geiler on the phone? This is Dr. Chris Saget. I guess not.
Madam President, this is Margaret Whalen. May I say something?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify for the record, this is a continuation of the complaint that was heard at the last board meeting. The board had directed staff to obtain further records from Dr. Geiler, and those were provided for you, so you don't specifically need to rehash the other portion if you don't want to, but I just want to ensure that you include the discussion, in the discussion, the new records that were received, or the additional records.
Okay. Okay.
And I thought I heard Dr. Geiler was present. Dr. Geiler, are you here? Okay. I must have been hearing things.
I thought I had heard that too. That's why I asked.
Oh, okay.
You were there because I had some questions. I had some questions concerning the records that were sent, but in lieu of his absence, I would just begin discussion by saying that the, you know, looking at different things, I was kind of confused as far as the records go, as far as, you know, the initial exam in January was fine as far as what was there, but then there was one other form where I think there were three columns that they go down the columns to say what happened on those visits. I was just going to ask him how he does bill, because he billed a 92004 in January, but there was never a 92310, which for the patient's sake, a 92310 tells us what we're doing with contact lenses. And specifically for contact lens fitting fees or a contact lens examination. And that's typically where you would charge someone for their exam, and then you would charge additionally a 92310 for the contact lens exam fitting fees or whatever it is you're doing with contacts. And typically when you call an office and they say they don't charge for follow-ups, it's because they probably charge the global fee in the beginning of 92310 of whatever amount they choose for whatever that fitting purpose is. And I didn't see a charge for that. But I saw a charge of 99213 on the subsequent two visits. And it's not, at least in my opinion, it's not standard protocol to do it that way, but you're free to charge that way if you want to, as far as my opinion goes, as long as the patient knows what's going on and how that's working. Because you could say you pay me now or pay me later. You can charge a global fee or you can charge on a per-visit basis. And the vast majority of people, I think, charge a global fee, which could account for some of the confusion from the patient. But that's the first thing that I noticed in looking at all this. I also had questions where he said he didn't charge for a refraction the second time. Well, he shouldn't charge for a refraction the second time because he didn't give a prescription. It was something he was doing to verify that his prescription was okay. So he really didn't, quote-unquote, give the patient anything because he shouldn't have charged for that either. But I'm more than willing to listen to anything else other people have to say.
Any other comments from the board?
I agree with what Dr. Hodges just said. I agree with everything that Dr. Christakis just said. Thank you.
This is Dr. Hunter.
This is Dr. Moffitt.
You summed that up. Dr. Kristal just summed that up very well.
Wow.
So this is Dr. Moffitt. I'll just offer my opinion on this. So I do believe that, so obviously the exam was billed correctly, and also, there was no contact lens fit fee. For the patient's benefit, usually when you do a fit, you would charge a separate fee for the fit, and that would include follow-up. I think that is standard practice. In this case, I think that it is generous to say that the contact lens follow-up actually meets the guidelines for a 99213 visit. So I disagree in that sense with the other board members that he can bill a 99213 for a contact lens follow-up, because the elements of a 99213 are not, in my opinion, being met. So I disagree with the other board members on that front. And also for the patient's benefit, you can report this to your insurance if you felt like it was billed inappropriately, and they can also audit and follow up on the visit to see if they agree with the way that it was billed. And the reason I would particularly bring this up, for instance, if your medical provider doesn't cover contact lens fit services, then billing a 99213 to cover an actual contact lens fit is not appropriate. And so I disagree with that, and I do think that there is error there. Also for the patient's benefit, I will say, though, that billing a, you would have been charged for a contact lens fit fee, and it likely could have been very close to this amount of money that you owe. My issue is that Dr. Geiler, in my opinion, should not have billed medical insurance, your medical provider, for this. He should have billed a contact lens fit fee, and that may have been covered or may have been denied by your insurance.
Yep, this is Dr. Sagas again. And I agree wholeheartedly. I just try not to get into coding issues, only because there's not much we can do about that. However, I do believe that there is. I'm going to make a motion as long as I can. I can do that during discussion, correct?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I would like to make a motion that a letter of concern be sent to Dr. Geiler specifically for, I think I have it here, R21-303B. Let me look that up on mine, which basically says a licensee shall inform a patient of all professional fees before providing treatment, or at least let the patient know how they're doing things so they know where things are coming from to reduce this type of miscommunication, or whatever you want to call it, and that's the motion I would make.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
This is Dr. Jones. I second that motion.
Okay. So let's take a vote. Dr. Hunter?
Excuse me, before you take the vote, I'll help you a little bit on this one. Let's ask for further discussion on the motion, just in case people have something to say, if they're for it or against it, just so we know before we vote.
Certainly. Okay, further discussion?
Can the patient
All right.
make a comment? Can the patient make a comment?
Mona, I think you have to step in here. Is she allowed to make a comment
yes.
at this point?
The board is in the middle of discussion and has a motion on the table. And also, just for the record, for clarification, this is not a non-disciplinary letter of concern. Is that correct, Dr. Chrysalis? And
yes.
Dr. Okay, thank you.
So we'll proceed with vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysalis?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I vote aye also. So the motion passes. Next we have Dr. Stephen Stahl, IR number 20201. Can I have one of the board members provide a summary, please?
This is Dr. Jones.
Okay.
I can go over.
Okay, Dr. Jones.
Patient MG saw Dr. Stahl and other doctors at Southwestern Eye. Oh, is somebody talking? Okay. For several visits in 2017, 18, and 19, he was noted to have papilledema and inflammation, and he was referred to a neurologist. The patient says that he felt like that he was having the papilledema because of a vaccination, Zostavax, that he had received, and that the neurologist agreed with that and said vaccination-induced visual disturbances. He was never given an exam for glasses, and they wouldn't help. He said he feels like that the reason that he can't see anything better than 20/50 out of his left eye is because Dr. Stahl never did anything about the herpes zoster, and now he has permanent eye damage. And I think that's it.
Okay. And Mr. King, do you have any comments you'd like to offer?
Actually, if possible, I'd like Dr. Stahl to go first, and I have some brief comments after that.
Absolutely. Dr. Stahl?
Hi, this is Dr. Stahl. I have a prepared statement to kind of go through a little bit more detail on the situation.
Okay.
Mr. President and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. I respectfully ask the board to dismiss the case. The treatment that my partners and I provided to the patient MG met the standard of care. I saw patient MG on two occasions, January 31st, 2018 and March 7th, 2018. On January 31st, 2018, MG's medical history included a prior stroke, type 2 diabetes, bilateral papilledema left greater than right, and mild proliferative diabetic retinopathy, both eyes. A head CT scan done a couple of months earlier was normal. On January 31st, 2018, MG's uncorrected visual acuity was 20/20 in the right eye and 20/50 in the left. MG told me he had seen something on TV about a week earlier indicating a possible connection between the Zostavax vaccine and necrotizing keratitis. MG had received the Zostavax shot approximately 1 year earlier and inquired about the causal relationship, if any, between the Zostavax injection and his visual difficulties. MG also asked me if I knew of any treatment for his condition. I did not, so I referred MG to a retina specialist, Dr. DeBuse. On March 7th, 2018, I saw MG for his second and last visit with me. MG refused to undergo lab work and other diagnostic tests that Dr. DeBuse had ordered. MG's neurologist had allegedly told MG that there was nothing wrong with him, and his prior MRI and CT of his brain had been normal. His visual acuity was still 20/20 in the right eye, 20/50 in the left. His OCT of the macula showed a stable right eye, but a slightly thinner left eye. I referred MG to a neuro-ophthalmologist. MG still believed the Zostavax shot had caused his left eye vision problems. I documented that I could not confirm or deny a causal relationship between the Zostavax shot and his vision problem. MG subsequently saw two other physicians at SEC, at Southwestern Eye Center, Dr. Chang on April 9th, 2018, and Dr. Kuntz on October 15th, 2019. More than 26 months after I saw MG, he submitted a board complaint against me, alleging that I had injured his eyes. At no time did I harm MG's eyes. At MG's October 25th, 2017 visit with Dr. Burton at Southwestern Eye Center, the uncorrected vision in his right eye was 20/20 and 20/200 in his left eye, and 20/100 in his left eye with pinhole testing. At his last visit with me on March 7th, 2018, MG's uncorrected vision was 20/20 in his right eye and 20/50 in his left eye. An up-to-date article that I reviewed entitled Vaccination for the Prevention of Shingles stated only 6 cases had been reported of optic neuritis, acute retinal necrosis, uveitis, or keratitis following vaccination with Zostavax. These patients developed vision loss from 6 days to 2 months following the Zostavax injection. Most were over 75 years of age, and one was immunocompromised, having undergone renal transplantation. MG had his initial visit with me 9 months after the Zostavax vaccination and had uncorrected 20/20 vision right eye and 20/50 vision left eye. At the two office visits that I had with MG, I performed the appropriate diagnostic tests and referred the patient to the appropriate specialist. I did not damage MG's vision and respectfully asked the board to dismiss this case.
Mr. King, any comments?
Yes, just briefly. As Dr. Stahl just stated, he did perform the appropriate diagnostic tests on the two occasions that he saw patient MG and did refer him to the appropriate specialist. There is no statutory violation, and we respectfully ask the board to dismiss the case. Thank you.
Okay. Board members, any discussion?
I believe the patient's on the phone.
Oh, I apologize. Yes. Is patient MG on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to make any comments, sir?
I initially saw the first doctor I saw at Southwest was in October of 2017, where I was diagnosed with the papilledema. That was only 6 months after the shot. The actual damage started right after the shot. I had 20/20 vision my entire life. And this damage started right after the shot. I saw a neurologist at the request of the doctors at Southwest, their request, where I had a CAT scan and a very intensive MRI. My doctor, Wee Hong Pan, suggested I had completely normal brain function and did not order a lumbar puncture. Subsequently, after that, I saw the news about December of 2017, after I saw Dr. Burton about the Zostavax. And that's where I correlated the damage. I had asked Dr. Stahl at one of our meetings if it was possible Zostavax was to blame for the damage. Also, my neurologist, I went and saw her after I found out about the Zostavax. And her conclusion was vaccination-induced visual disturbance was her exact verbiage on that eye exam. Then I saw Dr. Stahl, because Dr. Burton either retired or went somewhere else. And Dr. Stahl told me, yes, it was possible that Zostavax damaged my eyes or my eye. I was also told my right eye would be just as damaged as my left eye. All said, that never happened. Anyway, if you have HZO, which is herpes zoster toplomycus, I believe, antivirals are to be administered immediately, according to what I've read. I was never offered any antivirals. I was always told they were really didn't know what was wrong with my eyes. Also, whenever I asked if glasses would correct my vision, I was told it wouldn't. And in 6 visits with Southwest Eye Care, I was never offered nor given an eye exam for glasses, at which point I got another opinion across the street from a Dr. Paydar. He saw no papilledema in my right eye would be fine. I had a follow-up visit with him, and he gave me an eye exam for glasses and came up with a prescription and said I would indeed benefit from glasses. So that's all I know is the damage started right after the Zostavax shot. Thank you.
Okay. Board members, any discussion? Okay, so I have, this is Dr. Moffitt, and I have some comments regarding this case. There's kind of a lot to this, and so I think it's maybe difficult to get everyone on the same page. But the question is, did Dr. Stahl do anything inappropriate or harmful to patient MG's eyes? My impressions when looking over this patient MG is that, so herpes zoster presents usually with certain signs, and a lot of those you were lacking. So a rash, corneal involvement, an optic neuritis, which is something that can happen with herpes zoster, although I'll say in 19 years of practice I've never seen it. You can have an optic neuritis develop, and it can be delayed after you have infection. The concern with the Zostavax vaccine is that it can cause it can mimic a herpes zoster or a shingles infection in the eye. Absent of any other findings in the eye, so if you had corneal involvement or a rash, vesicular outbreak, inflammation in the eye, swelling of the cornea, any of those things, they would have been noted on exam, and they were absent at all of your visits. You did have swelling of the optic nerve, and that's confirmed with imaging. So there's no question of that because we have the images available to us. We can see that. When you have swelling of the optic nerve, it can be due to a number of different potential problems. And without doing a lumbar puncture and the follow-up laboratory testing, you cannot differentiate one condition from another. So the neurologist telling you not to have a lumbar puncture is a very odd thing for me to hear. Papilledema, which is what was being discussed, is due to elevated intracranial pressure, and you can't determine that without the lumbar puncture. The laboratory work, when you have also this history of cardiovascular disease, this could also be due to that. So without having done that testing, there is really no way to tell what the actual cause of your problem was. I'll also say that at presentation, lacking those clinical signs that we discussed, corneal swelling, vesicular rash, inflammation inside of the eye, any of that, there was no antiviral therapy indicated by your presentation. The way you presented, there was nothing in there to indicate that antiviral therapy would be indicated. So that's also, and because it was so delayed, so many months after the injection, I don't think anyone would reasonably conclude that they should put you on antivirals. There is potential intervention if you have an optic neuritis, which I will say also there were no complaints consistent with a retrobulbar optic neuritis or inflammation of the nerve at your presentation with Dr. Burton, I believe was your first doctor that you saw. And it's questionable if steroid treatment would have helped. Usually that has to be administered almost immediately if you have an optic neuritis patient, and it's considered in some ways equivocal. Whether you do it or don't do it, the outcome is likely going to be the same. So I have to say that Dr. Stahl, in my opinion, handled everything appropriately. He sent you to a retina specialist to rule out any kind of vasculitis or retinitis, which can be associated with that vaccination. The corneal findings were ruled out on exam. There were no evidence of corneal findings or keratitis, which is also something that's been mentioned. The optic neuritis, it's possible, but it didn't behave very much like an optic neuritis. It lingered for quite a while, in my opinion. I would say that you can report your experience to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System via the Department of Health and Human Services, and that might be a way that you could pursue this further. Are there any other complaints by board members, or I'll make a motion?
I have some comments, but they're basically in agreement with you, so I'm not going to go over all of that. This is Dr. Krasinas, by the way. Aside from all the medical terminology you just had to hear as far as to the patient, it's okay. No, it needed to be heard, and it needed to be said because it all is true. Our goal here is to find out if an optometrist violated optometric statutes. Did they not perform the way they should have? Did they not do the appropriate testing? Did they not do the appropriate referring, et cetera, et cetera? And while it's unfortunate that you have this condition in your eyes where you're not seeing as well, which is significant, I agree that I don't believe the doctor did anything wrong based on the presentation that you had. That doesn't mean that you can't do anything about it or it shouldn't be reported, just as Dr. Moffitt mentioned, there are ways you can go about it. Indeed, because there's no way of knowing if this happened from Zostavax or not. And in the absence of any other typical findings we get from herpes zoster, they wouldn't have given you an antiviral if there was nothing to show for it other than, you know, a papilledema that could happen. And so, like I said, it's unfortunate, and there's definitely a loss of vision here. But I don't think it's because of a lack of care from Dr. Stahl. That's all I wanted to say.
Any other comments?
Yes, can I make a comment?
Sure. Oh, sorry.
The lack of an eye exam for glasses has not been addressed in this discussion.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'm happy to respond to you, patient MG. If you have optic nerve edema, your vision is reduced as a result of the swelling in the optic nerve, and glasses, in my opinion, would not have helped you. When you saw an outside doctor after the fact, the edema in the left eye had largely resolved. And so let's say, for instance, we have a patient who has an active condition. That's not the time to prescribe glasses, generally, in my opinion. But when it is resolved and stable, then that's an opportunity if glasses are indicated or necessary. But this is not this drop or decline in vision from so your initial presentation, 2200, and then improvement to 2050, is not a refractive condition. So it is not repaired by glasses. When another doctor offers you glasses when you're stable, that can be to address things like reading discomfort or difficulty. If you have a little refractive error, then that's fine to offer it then. But I agree with the way things were handled with Dr. Stahl and the other doctors at Southwest Eye, and I also would not have offered you glasses in the midst of that unless you had a particular request for it. For instance, I broke my glasses and I really need replacement, then I would have addressed it. But this was not an active refractive condition where a glasses prescription was prompted. This was a medical condition that was being monitored. Any other comments from board members? Okay. So hearing no comments, I would like to make a motion to dismiss the complaint as there was no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
This is Dr. Jones.
I second it.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, we'll vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Krasagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mestoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The motion passes. Next complaint, Kelly Moffitt, OD, IR number 202101. As I am the respondent in this case, I am going to recuse myself from the board during discussion. Dr. Jones, would you like to proceed?
Yes. Does anyone want to give a summary of this complaint? Anyone? Okay. I will try my best. I'm not the greatest summary person. This is Dr. Jones. So patient GM saw Dr. Moffitt on 4/25/19, was going to get fit. She basically considers herself a hard fit just because she has keratoconus, and she was going to get fit for contact lenses. She's had, I think that she's had surgery. I can't remember if it was both eyes or one eye in the past. But she was, basically what was happened is she was fit. She said they weren't doing well. It looks like when she initially came in, she was like 2100. The first fit she got better. I know at the end she was down to 2050, but the patient still was not happy with the fit of the contact lens. She came back for multiple follow-ups, also had a few no-shows in there. And then she became at the very end where she was almost out of warranty for the contact lenses. And I know there was some communication back and forth between the doctor and the patient, maybe on voicemail. And in the end, the patient does want a refund for the contact lenses because she said she was not fit properly, and she says she still cannot see with the contact lens. Does anyone have any discussion? Is the patient here? I haven't heard patient GM here. I guess not.
Great.
Okay. I thought she was too. Okay. Dr. Moffitt, do you want to give your side of the story?
I would. Patient GM presented, she was a self-referred scleral contact lens fit. When she presented in clinic, she was uncorrected in the right eye, and she has a cornea transplant in the right eye, left eye keratoconus. Presenting acuities were 2200 in the right eye, 2100 in the left eye, obviously not legal to drive. She was complaining of headaches and difficulty with her vision. Performed a dilated eye exam and scleral lens fit in both eyes, and at sitting she showed potential vision of 20/40 in the right eye and 20/60 in the left eye. Whenever I perform a fitting like this, I'll try multiple lenses on the patient's eye, and once I think I've achieved the best fit, I'll have the patient sit and wait, because vault has to be evaluated and the lens has to sit on the eye for, depending on the lens, a certain amount of time. In this case, at least 30 minutes, and then vision is evaluated. At that point, the patient's been wearing the lens for a while, and I'll reevaluate again and evaluate vision. We will have a discussion regarding the warranty of the lenses, the cost, and all of that is reviewed before I even initiate fitting. Patient elected to proceed in both eyes with scleral lens fit. This also at the time was discussed that her eye exam, so she was billed for eye exam and corneal topography, which are necessary, but that the contact lens fit itself was a non-covered service with her insurance, and the contact lenses were also a non-covered service, and they would be out of pocket. When she sat wait with the contact lenses, vision was evaluated afterwards, and she elected to proceed with both. At this point, I will oftentimes assess the contact lens fit, and then I'll require a deposit on the contact lenses. And if the patient decides that they don't want to proceed, then they just don't pay that, and I don't order the lenses. So patient GM was aware of the cost of the fitting, the cost of the lenses, the warranty period, all of that before she proceeded. And then I ordered lenses for her. When she followed up May 16th for her first check at dispense, These lenses I ordered with tangible hydropeg, and since even though she'd worn scleral lenses before with the tangible hydropeg, there's some training involved with how to clean and care for the lenses, and so I had a mini train done with her at that visit and saw her at initial distance. She was 20/16 both eyes. I asked her to return in 1 to 2 weeks for a contact lens check. I also reviewed the cleaning and care again with her and ask her to slowly increase her wear time and to make sure that she follows up having worn the lenses at least a few hours before I see her at follow-up. 5/23/19, she no-showed for follow-up. 6/6/19, she followed up. She noted that she was having discomfort in the right eye. I believe it was inferior edge that she had more difficulty with, but she said all around also was bothering her. The left eye, she said she felt the nasal edge of the lens. She had not been wearing the lenses for the previous week and a half. She had been wearing her old lens. We did discuss how this makes it really difficult to evaluate the new lenses and how they're fitting on the eye, as I might be looking at the eye and only seeing irritation or fitting from the old lens and not from the new. So this was discussed, and I encouraged her, please, to try to wear the new lenses, even if it's in a limited capacity each time, and to return. I did reorder the lenses at that visit. I flattened the base curve in both eyes. I was concerned there may be a little bit of limbal touch, and I adjusted the peripheral curves as well and increased the vault in her left eye. 7/11, patient was due to return with her new lenses, and she no-showed for appointment. 7/25/19, patient was scheduled to return, and she again no-showed for her appointment. I asked one of my staff members, because I saw these multiple no-show appointments, to reach out to the patient and to convey that it was really important that she came back in, that warranty time was being lost, and that and I knew she had expressed some discontent at her first visit. So she did present on 7/30 and returned in follow-up, presenting acuities were 20/40 in the right eye, 20/80 in the left eye. She reported again that the lenses were not comfortable, that now she felt them under the upper lid. She also told me she had been using her prednisone drop, which is for her cornea transplant eye, on occasion in both eyes, which I reviewed with her was not to be done. I talked with her at this visit that her warranty time was going to expire on August 8th. So almost a week later, she was out of warranty time on the lenses, and after that point, they couldn't be returned and they couldn't be modified any further. And I encouraged her at this visit to return the lenses. One of the reasons I use this lens initially whenever I possibly can is that it is warrantied and they will take it back. A lot of other scleral lenses on the market, there is no warranty period. You may order the lens and you may get one exchange, but you won't get a refund. So I think this is a much more patient-friendly warranty policy, and so I try to get patients in this lens as a result. But she elected at that time that she wanted to forgo refund and that she wanted to pursue another order. So she had a bit of central touch in the left eye at that visit, so I increased the vault, and I also steepened the base curve but increased the diameter on both eyes to try and increase the sort of the balanced foothold of the peripheral curves on the sclera, hoping that that would result in better comfort, but increase the diameter so as to move the optical zone out and away from the limbus. I asked her to return after she'd worn the lens 1 to 2 weeks, and she never returned. So a contact lens prescription was never finalized because she didn't return. There were three more calls to the office made after that. One was in September, and she thought she might have mistaken or switched the lenses, and she wanted to be seen the same day to have me see if I could fix it. I was really busy, booked out the entire week. My staff member did get on the phone with her and try to help. One of the eyes was front surface toric, and so it's thicker, and you can feel that, and tried to assist her. In February 3rd, I also got a message that said that she was unhappy with the lenses, and that she was unhappy that I had refused to see her. Also that she was supposed to receive two pair of lenses instead of one. And I did call back and left her a message. She didn't answer, but I did call back and leave her a message that I was happy to see her. I'd never told her I wouldn't see her. She was only supposed to get one pair of lenses, so I'm not sure where that idea came from. And that she was welcome to follow up any time, and we could see if I could help. And then I got one more message on March the 10th demanding that I call her that afternoon. So I got the message around lunch. I needed to call her back that day or she was going to go to the state board. I responded to that call as well. When I called back, she didn't answer. I left her a message that this was not a very effective way for us to communicate and not conducive to good care, and maybe she should find another doctor if she's having such trouble with me in our practice. So that's the extent of my interaction with patient GM.
Okay. Do we have any discussion with the board members?
I have a few questions. This is Dr. Chrysagas.
Okay.
In dealing with these contacts myself, I think I've seen this scenario numerous times with people, and while it's unfortunate, it is part of the game with these types of lenses because they are hard to fit, and the patients are in a bad position. They need these lenses to see. It's not just a vanity thing. The one question I have, Dr. Moffitt, is I know you probably go over these fees because we have to go over these fees, especially on a private paid patient. So I'm not denying that you had to talk. Do you have any type of form or any type of, for lack of a better term, I'll say a transparency where, you know, they see what it is up front and they sign it and you sign it and there's basically a written type of authorization or whatever you want to call it where everyone's you know, seeing this form and know what the rules are.
So I do discuss this in person with the patient, what the fitting fee will be and the cost of the lenses, what that looks like as well. My typical policy is that I explain all of that, and then if they want to proceed with fit, we go ahead and do that. If they want to proceed with order, then they do that, and then I explain to them they'll be charged the fit fee today. They'll be charged the deposit on the lenses today. If they don't want to make the deposit now or don't want to pay for the lenses now, they can delay on making the deposit and call back when they're ready to make it, and then I will order the lenses when they're ready, so it doesn't delay warranty. So one comment, this is not a direct answer to your question, but sometimes patients will want to delay paying because they want to save the money for the lenses, and so I make it clear that when they pay the deposit, then I will proceed with the order of the lenses. We do have a form that they sign for non-covered services. I don't sign the form, but it comes from the practice, and she was well aware that this was a non-covered service from her insurance. She was on the phone with her insurance actually during the fitting process, and was well aware that this would be non-covered service. We did offer and also submit to her insurance as a medical necessity to see if they would pay or offer her some benefit towards this, but that is how we handle it. But, yes, we do get a non-covered service paper signed, I guess is how I would say that.
Okay. Well, only because it's just what I've seen in my practice, sometimes you almost have to go overboard with that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's unfortunate that the patient isn't on the call to hear this discussion, just so that because it's going to just so that they could know what goes into these decisions at all. But I'd like to make a motion to dismiss for lack of a violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Dr. Mastoris, I second. Great. We have a motion and a second. I guess at this point I do the vote.
Yes, this is Margaret Whalen.
Discussion.
Ask for further discussion first.
Yes. Oh. Okay. Is there any further discussion on this motion? Hearing none, we'll take a vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
And I vote aye, Dr. Jones.
Motion passes 4-1. Dr. Jones, this is Margaret. 4-0, excuse me.
Pass 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you,
Margaret,
Dr.
Margaret, can I say something?
Oh. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Krasagas.
Can I say something, Margaret? I mean, if possible, I'd like to direct staff that when you're communicating with the patient that if possible or if they'd want to, if they could listen to the minutes of the meeting, it might be beneficial so they know what we talked about and what was said rather than just a straight out, you know, they get a letter saying, you know, there was no violation, we dismissed it, that it might be beneficial for them to hear the discussion that went in, that it wasn't just basically a rubber stamp of, you know, of approval that nothing was done incorrectly.
Thank you, Dr. Krasagas. This is Margaret Whalen. We did add a paragraph at the end of the dismissal letter once the recordings were posted online in January, I believe, of 2019. So it, the last paragraph does tell the patient, please go online and review the audio recording.
Perfect. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Madam President, are you back?
Okay. I am. I'm back. So item E.
Actually,
Madam
President.
Discussion and.
I am so sorry to interrupt you. This is Margaret Whalen. If we could take item G for Dr. David Anderson, since he is present by phone.
Oh, certainly.
I would appreciate that. Thank
you
so
much. No problem. So item G, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of probationary order. Number one, David Anderson, OD. Let's see here. So Dr. Anderson has copies of his audit reports available for our review. Are there any comments by board members or any discussion or concerns regarding these audit reports? Okay. So this is Dr. Moffitt. I'll offer that I think the reports, I'm glad to see them. They are a little bit lacking in detail, would be my only comment, more like a checklist. And so they don't give us the auditor's impression, would be my only comment. Any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was going to ask Dr. Anderson, was there ever a, I know he's out of state, did he ever come to the office or has this all been electronic?
Electronic because his visit to Arizona was canceled because of COVID.
Right.
I
just didn't know if he'd ever gotten out or not.
No.
Okay. And it is a it is being done, which is great. The it's definitely.
I was going to say he happens to be very familiar with my EMR, which is Crystal. So. Apparently he uses that one or something like that. So anyway, that just is helpful because he can maneuver around it easily.
Yeah, I think we're just spoiled in that the last reports we used to get from a certain other Arizona doctor were quite lengthy and.
Well, can we send him something and ask for more of a like whatever you guys like? It'd be nice. You know, I actually agree with you guys. I'm like, oh, he checked him off. That. You know, I mean, I get it. It's just, it would be nice if he had a comment like, you know, learn how to spell. Or...
Well, you know, it's great that you say that only because in the few instances that we have used this and we have had someone going into the practice and did get a lengthy report, I can honestly say that not only did the doctor, when they got feedback, it's something they could act on. And for I think both of them that I remember, actually it was an arduous process, but they liked it because they really got a good feedback and it helped them. And I can honestly say that so did I, sitting there listening to it, asking it. I learned some things too about record keeping, et cetera. So yeah, I think a little bit of feedback would definitely benefit you and the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that brings me up to something else. You know, I one of my requirements is this 6 hours of ethics stuff, and I think I did 3 hours. You know, it's really hard to find that. Could I finish up with record keeping? Because that would be more appropriate and actually give me, you know, would give me something positive to do instead of, you know, the other one you can file under torture. I mean, if you can't figure out the ethics, you know, your parents didn't raise you right. And I had good parents. So, I mean, I did go through that one, I think 3 hours of, I think it was 3 hours. And it was so hard to find anything that's relevant. But the record keeping would be, and billing would be helpful.
So this is Dr. Moffitt. Margaret, I'm under the impression that we can't change the order at this stage. Am I incorrect about that?
Madam President, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen. The board can amend the order, but they should open up, I guess, a request, or it's not really a complaint, but something to make the request separately to amend the order, especially at the request of the respondent. I think it would be appropriate to at least for the board to consider the issue at the next board meeting. So at this time, you know, if the board is accepting the reports, you can certainly make a motion to accept the reports that were submitted and either direct staff to ask the auditor for a little bit more detail or at least include his own impressions. And then you could also make a second motion to open up a separate review of the order to amend it.
At the next meeting?
At the next meeting, okay. Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Moffitt. I'll also just offer to Dr. Anderson that we haven't seen the review of your ethics classes yet, and so before having reviewed the subject matter of that, I probably would be hesitant to change the order at this time, but I would consider it. This is just my own opinion. I would be more open to that idea once we'd had a chance to review the ethics classes that you've taken.
So the classes that I took, I had pre-approval. So I can get you whatever you need if Margaret doesn't have it. So I'll connect with her outside of this meeting to make sure that you guys have what you need for that.
Okay. Well, Margaret, if we're going to discuss at the next meeting, you would basically have the information on what the class was and everything else, correct?
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Christakis, I'll create a little summary and include that with the materials.
Yeah, because I know it was approved.
Wonderful.
It was approved, yes.
So we could just see, what it was and where we go from there. So does this require a motion for all the things that you mentioned, Margaret, as far as the asking Dr. Botts for a more complete report? And
That doesn't specifically require a motion, Dr. Christakis. If you wanted to move to accept the reports that were submitted, I think just to have the record be clear, that the board did review the reports and that they were accepted. I would appreciate that. And then the board can just direct staff to ask the auditor to, to change the report a little bit.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we accept the audit.
Pardon me. Hello, Dr. Christakis, Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, Ms. Whalen. This is Mona Bask, and I'm unclear regarding accepting the reports. Are you accepting the reports for compliance with the consent agreement, or
I'm accepting the reports for compliance for because I don't think it's complete. It's only a 3 month report.
Correct.
I'm accepting it for where we're at now in time as far as the reports. I'm accepting those as part of the continuing saga of the order.
Ms. Baskin, this is Margaret Whalen. If you don't want a motion or don't feel it's appropriate for a motion at this time, I'm fine with that. I just was asking the board to accept to date the reports. But if you would rather the board waited until all the reports have been submitted to meet the order, that's fine too. I just didn't really mind one way or the other.
Thank you, Ms. Whalen. Members of the board, I think that the board can, in their discussion, the minutes will reflect that the board has approved and has not, that you have reviewed the reports.
and that they are, you know, part of Dr. Anderson's compliance with his order. And then your board discussion also is directing Ms. Whalen to request that the reporting doctor provide additional information, a little bit more detail regarding Dr. Anderson's compliance and understanding with Arizona law regarding documentation in the medical record. So I don't think that needs to be an official motion.
Perfect. What she said.
At this point.
Yep, that sounds great.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Baskin. I appreciate that so much.
And then can we also request the staff to put together a summary of the order of where we're at with it so we can discuss it at the next meeting?
Duly noted.
Okay.
All right. If there's no further discussion.
I have a question, Dr. Anderson.
Okay.
Do I need, in order to ask for a change in the type of continuing education you wanted me to do, the additional stuff, do I need to send in a request, or has that already been requested through the meeting? My request would be to change the rest of my CE, which I believe is 3 hours remaining, from ethics to record keeping and billing, really billing, because that's, I think, the one thing that is that I would enjoy learning more about and would help me do a better job.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. I think what would be advisable is if Dr. Anderson could please memorialize his request to the board so that we'd have a formal request within the record, and then all that could be brought back to the next board meeting, including the continuing education courses and certificates that he's taken thus far, so that the board can review everything in totality and we have a written record of it. Thank you.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I agree. Any other comments?
Dr. Anderson, thank you.
Dr. Anderson, I think we'd like you to make a formal request.
We will. Or I'm sitting here with my office manager. I appreciate you guys. You guys have a good day.
Thank you. You too. So then just Dr. Moffitt, moving on to agenda item E. Review and discussion of possible action on pending regular license applications. This is Randy Wolf. Does the board have any questions or discussion about this applicant?
Margaret, I'm assuming you put this on because there were some problems in the past.
That's correct, Dr. Chrysagas.
Which I believe in reading, it had been dismissed, or there were changes in the order.
That's correct. Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Chrysagas, this was a regular disclosure as required under our law during the licensing application process. So because of that, I also am not eligible to review the application, which is why it sits before you. And the doctor provided a detailed explanation as well as the final disposition of both cases, I believe, and both were dismissed. And they were not as recent as in the last 5 years, if I recall correctly. So the board just needs to consider whether or not there was disclosure, if there was honesty up front. That's required by the board. That's an integrity issue of moral character that we require in our law. And whether or not the board sees any kind of red flags or issues that may be potential patient safety issues. If not, they can certainly just issue the license under the law as usual, or if they feel like there is an issue that they want the doctor to do something, they can issue a letter of concern for the license or disciplinary action if they felt it rose to that level.
Any concerns on the part of the board? Would any board member like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the application of Randy Wolf, OD, for licensure in the state of Arizona.
This is Dr. Jones. I second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. So we'll vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones? Dr. Jones?
Aye. Can you guys hear me?
Now we can.
Yes.
Now we can.
Okay. And I vote aye. Looks like the motion carries. Next item, F, Executive Director Approval of New License Applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Margaret?
Thank you, Madam President. Members of the board, as you can see, we've been a little bit busy. Those are the applications that have been approved by the Executive Director position as delegated by the board since our last board meeting in June. So this would be June 13th through yesterday. August 6th. So just about 26. I think we did like 24 here.
What do you do when you get past 26 and you don't have any letters left? You have to go into numbers and...
Yeah, we'll start with double A at that point.
yeah, exactly.
So for the record, these are all the doctors that have been approved for licensure.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Item G, review, discussion, and possible action of approval or on approval of testing centers for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R421203C. I'm going to reference, I believe, all of these together, number 1, 2, and 3. Are there any comments from the board or concerns about these testing centers or potential testing centers?
Margaret, I believe you said that they all seem to meet muster.
That's correct, Dr. Chrysagas. I always review them, go to the websites, check the phone numbers and the people, and everything checks out.
I'll make a motion that we accept these three locations for testing centers.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll second.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The motion carries. Item I, review and discussion and possible action on designating underserved Arizona communities for optometry students participating in the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, or WICHE, professional student exchange program. So there's a location here for a hospital in Fort Defiance, Arizona. And they are looking to see if we will declare this a underserved population so that an applicant can discharge his obligation to the WICHE program by serving in this community or at this hospital. Are there any comments from board members regarding this?
Margaret, I saw you in response, and it was quite complete, but I also understand their question back as to, but we didn't answer the question about whether it's an underserved area. I would actually ask someone who has some experience with the Indian Health Service if they consider Fort Defiance a hospital, a underserved area, or do they have no trouble getting doctors up there, which is Dr. Jones.
Yes. No, this is Dr. Jones. No, I agree. Yes, it is an underserved area. I know that it's very hard to find doctors in that area and to get them to stay. So, you know, yes, Cuba City, Fort Defiance, a lot of those places like that, they have a really hard time having doctors there.
Dr. Moffitt, this is Margaret Whalen. May I speak?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Chrysagas, to address your question specifically before Dr. Jones spoke, I do not have the authority to respond on behalf of the board in this particular case, so my response back to Ms. Lynch, excuse me, was kind of in hopes that they would glean an answer based on the statistical data that was submitted.
Right.
I think the ratios were clear. I mean, one optometrist every 5,200 people is kind of, that says exceptional need to me. However, to support the board's decision, and I did not provide it in your paperwork, I actually was only able to finish my research as late as yesterday, so I apologize. But I do have, from the Health and Human Services off their website, they have a data website where they list the underserved counties of Arizona. And this county, this city falls under there, the Navajo Indian Reservation, as well as Fort Defiance. So I would be confident if the board did want to approve it as exceptional need, that we would have the documentation to support the board's decision.
You know, going out on a limb here, we could say that, if we grant this, he's only going to stay half the time he would have to. So we probably shouldn't, so that way he stays there longer. But there's a very good chance that if he doesn't get this, he'd leave and go somewhere else anyway. So I'd make a motion to consider Fort Defiance as an area of exceptional need and to grant him the reduction of service years to payback, which he, so to speak.
Dr. Hunter, I second.
Dr. McFerrin? Oh, I second, too. Third.
Any other discussion? Okay, we'll vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The motion carries. Item J, Executive Director's Report. Margaret?
Thank you, Madam President. Item number J1, I would like to just give you a wrap-up of the end of the fiscal year 2020, which was July 1st of 2019 to June 30th of this year. We have a total number of licensees of 1,266 licensed doctors in Arizona, doctors of optometry. The number of licenses the board issued in fiscal year 20 was 85. That's actually a little bit higher number than we normally have. Historically, we issue 40 to 65 applications, so this was a substantial increase, excuse me, which I believe is due to Midwestern University being open at this point in time. We received a total number of 21 complaints, 19 of which were resolved during that fiscal year, so through June 30th of this year. We held 10 board meetings. And I'm sorry, I don't know. I didn't mean to disconnect these. The total number of disciplinary actions taken from the complaints that we received was 1, and the total number of letters of concern from the complaints that were received was 4. So I think if anyone looked at our statistics or the processes of the board, I'd say that the board is doing an excellent job of serving the public and protecting the public through its regulations. So from staff to the board, we thank you so much for your hard work and dedication throughout the year. It means a lot to us to have such a great board. So keep up the good work, as we will, and thank you for that. I unfortunately do not have the appropriation utilized or the ending cash balance for fiscal year 20. I hope to have it at the next board meeting. The Central Services Bureau, which we call CSB, is an ADOA agency, and they are undergoing some major transitioning of positions. They actually lost the 3 accounting positions that were CSB over here for the regulatory boards. So they've kind of had no leader and no other accountants that were closing out the years, so hence I do not have the ending numbers. So I apologize, but I hope to have those at the next board meeting. The current budget update, we're in fiscal year 21, so that started July 1st of this year, and it will run through June 30th of next year, next calendar year. Our appropriation for the board is $240,700. It remains the same as it was in 2020. Our budgets are due September 1st of this year, as they always are. So I will be asking for a little bit more appropriation to cover costs of the online system that we have, the Salesforce, it's called, and also some other IT services that we need for upgrades that just haven't been done because we haven't had the appropriation. So hopefully the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting will approve our justifications and we'll get an increase to our appropriation. I also don't have the beginning and ending cash balance for reasons stated earlier for the current month, so I apologize, but hopefully I will have at least July next month or when our next board meeting is. 2020 executive orders addressing COVID-19 issues. The only one that really affects our board or our licensees is 2020-40. That was effective June 18th, which was after our June 12th board meeting. Excuse me. That one basically says that the Department of Health shall implement a consistent statewide system for case investigation and contact tracing and manage the public health activities on behalf of the state. Businesses shall assist in efforts to contain the spread by updating and enforcing written policies in accordance with Executive Order 2020-36, which is entitled Stay Healthy, Return Smarter, Return Stronger. That also required that they adopt the guidance from CDC, Department of Labor, OSHA, and the Department of Health to limit the spread of COVID. The provision is actually shall be enforced by law and regulatory agencies that have jurisdiction over the business as prescribed in paragraph 5. We are a regulatory agency, but because we don't regulate practice management, it actually doesn't directly affect us, but I suppose indirectly it could. I think someone would have to file a complaint, and it may have to be referred, you know, if they felt that a business, an optometry practice, wasn't following the guidelines. But paragraph 5 states, in part, the intent of the executive order is to ensure that the state of Arizona continues to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. All law enforcement and regulatory agencies that have enforcement authority under existing law should focus on educating and working to promote best practices. Upon initial violation, notice of the provision of this order and associated guidance from DHS shall be provided and an opportunity to comply shall be offered to the business. And finally, the order shall remain in place until further notice and shall be considered for repeal or revision at least every 2 weeks. So the governor is going to stay on top of it, and every 2 weeks, this particular executive order will be reviewed. Are there any future agenda items that the board would like to see for discussion? Going once, going twice?
Probably just that Dr. Anderson,
Oh, definitely.
Concern.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Future board meeting dates. We've already had, we've met our 6 meetings for the year already this year. So because that is calendar year, not fiscal year. So it's really up to the board or Madam President if you wanted to address the issue. I think with the board business at hand, we could certainly entertain like an October or November board meeting to finish out the year. I'll let you guys go ahead and make some comments, thoughts, or others.
Would that be a problem for Dr. Anderson if we waited till all the way to November to allow him to do something with I just don't know where it goes in his order as far as the timeline goes if we waited that long to do it.
No, it's a 2-year probation.
I had, 'cause the only thing, okay.
So,
and do you have any complaints pending?
No, this cleared out my docket.
Hey.
So, yeah, knock on wood. So, I mean, so based on that, that's why I kind of felt like if the board wanted to kind of play it by ear and we could tentatively schedule November to finish out the year, you know, but should something come up that was urgent, you know, just like in prior cases, you know, I would ask the board have a lunchtime meeting or something like that if we needed to clear something off, you know. due to some time frame
or something? It sounds good to me.
Okay. I mean, is everyone available?
This is Dr. Moffitt. So the November 13th, we would keep that?
It's the first Friday.
And it's rescheduled?
November 6th, I believe.
Oh, it's the 6th. Good. I need everybody's help with this stuff.
Yeah, I believe it's the 6th. Ms. Baskin, are you available on November 6th?
Yes, I am. I am available on November 6th. Thank you.
All right. So, Madam President, if it pleases you, I would like to recommend November 6th as our next and possibly final board meeting of 2020, if all board members are hopefully available.
Okay.
And that concludes my...
And maybe in person.
That I don't know. Hopefully it would be in person, but if not, we'll be here telephonically again. So.
Yep.
Margaret,
I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question about the report. Is 10 meetings for last year, isn't that that's big for us, isn't it?
That is a lot. Under statute, the board's only mandated to meet at least 6 times per year. So historically, the board meets every other month. We've just had a lot of, things going on. So, and then getting
blame it on an overzealous president.
Yes. And then, getting the new board members. So we just had, a little more meetings than we normally do. But, like I said, it is a lot.
I was surprised when you said that.
I didn't think it was that many either, so I was surprised as well. But, we met almost every month. So any other questions about any of the items on my director's report? Well, then I conclude my report, Madam President.
Okay. So item K, call to the public. Any members of the public wish to speak? Okay. So hearing none, can I get a motion to adjourn?
This is Dr. Jones.
Dr. Hunter. Go ahead, Dr. Jones.
Okay, I make a motion to adjourn the meeting today.
Dr. Hunter.
Wonderful. Okay, we'll vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. The motion carries.
So the meeting is adjourned at...
Right. Well, thank you, everybody.
10:25.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Stay well.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you.
All board members were present.